This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Xiaoning and Jen Sun. Let's turn our attention now to what's happening in one of the neighboring countries of ASEAN. We're looking at the third largest democratic country in the world, Indonesia. On Tuesday this week, lawmakers ratified changes to its colonial-era criminal code that activists and critics say could curtail human rights and freedoms.
The new code imposed bans on insulting the president and state institutions, views that contradict state ideology, protests without a permit, sex outside marriage and non-marital cohabitation. The laws have been years in the making and was supposed to be passed in 2019, but had to be postponed after days of violent demonstrations erupted as protesters demanded the government to withdraw it.
So why is this new criminal code so controversial, and what will the impact be on the country of more than 270 million people? For some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us Dr. Ross Tapsell, senior lecturer at the Australian National University. Good morning, Ross. Thanks very much for joining us today. So I'd like to start with the purpose of these amendments. Why did the government feel it necessary to make the changes to the criminal code? What were the aims of these changes?
Well, good morning to you all and to your listeners. Yes, we've known for quite some time, probably about 10 years now, that Indonesian democracy has been in steady decline. But it is an important question, isn't it? Why would you bring in these laws, which everybody seems to say is highly problematic? And I think there's some really interesting lessons for Malaysia here too. One issue for Indonesia is they don't really have an opposition. And so they've got this unity government, as you might call it there, where the former opposition leader is now the defense minister. And so parliament's passing laws without any particular problems or debates, and it's getting through despite protests. The second issue I think that's really interesting is that the strategy of the government is to, in some ways, appease Islamist voters or this rising Islamism in Indonesia, one through piety in order to intrude more into the private lives of citizens, but also to crack down on hardliners. And that has meant that you've got these bills which are, you know, no sex before marriage, these kind of things, which is the piety aspect, but also cracking down on Islamists and other dissenters who might criticize the government in order to safeguard democracy or safeguard Pancasila. And so this is the two-pronged approach, which is ultimately leading to a decline in democracy there.
And Ross, how will this new law set Indonesia back in terms of freedom of speech and press freedom?
So I don't think anyone's suggesting that there's going to be broad crackdowns on the media, for example. But the question would be the selective prosecution now that could occur, because there are these laws there, you can insult the president. If you think in Malaysia, the case of the anti-fake news law that was brought in 2018, obviously, you know, it wasn't a whole raft of people who got prosecuted, but a few people could, and there were these broad, unclear laws, and that scared everyone else. And that's really what we're looking at here around freedom of expression and freedom of the press. Selective prosecution means a chilling effect for those who might speak out against the government.
Okay, the other question I have with regards to this is then, how does Indonesia then compare with other nations in the region which also have similar controls on criticism of the state?
I think everyone in the region and Australia and the world is trying to figure out how to handle the rise of digital media communications and in some ways how to regulate these new forms of communication, right? Hate speech, insults, fitnah, slander, these kind of things. In Southeast Asia, the solution has often been, let's bring in more laws. And we know that again from the Malaysia example of the anti-fake news law, which has since been revoked. But Thailand would have other kinds of example. And now Indonesia is saying, we're going to have a specific law that you can't insult the president. And so overall, I think this approach has reduced democracy and freedom of expression, and the Southeast Asian regional approach to have more laws isn't necessarily a good thing. But it's not an easy answer. We're still trying to figure all this out. What's the best way to make sure that we're not vilifying and defaming and putting out more hate speech and polarizing societies?
Ross, the last time legislatures tried to pass this new law in 2019, it triggered days of violent demonstrations, which delayed the passing of the legislation. But what would you make of public response presently after the law has been passed compared to a few years ago?
I think there are fears of crackdowns. I think we saw that a few years ago where students and activists were targeted by the police and security forces, some of whom were arrested, many of whom did face crackdowns. So I think that explains this muted response. Of course, as your correspondent said earlier, the protesting without a permit now makes it harder to have a spontaneous protest. But also, I think as you in any society, when you move more towards an semi-authoritarian style system or a system where democracy is declining, at least, which is the case in Indonesia, you do get more underground subversive messages and ways of expressing concerns. And that might be online through memes or through subtle messages. And we saw this again in Malaysia during the 1MDB scandals, right, when it was not clear that you could openly talk about 1MDB many years ago. People used memes and WhatsApp closed messenger groups and these kind of things to express their opinion. And that's what's happening now in Indonesia.
Okay, the other question I have is that, and I've been reading that the provisions are very broad and vaguely formulated. And as a result, it can be applied to anyone. Is that really the case? Who can bring a case against an individual using this new code?
Yeah, so again, there's a whole range of new codes here. If you're talking specifically about the Sex Outside Marriage Code, you do have to be reported by an immediate family member. So that would be a spouse, a parent, or a child, which means, again, you're not likely to see, you know, a huge raft of people getting arrested in Indonesia for having sex outside of marriage. But you may get a couple of high-profile cases. And that, by the way, may include, you know, Malaysian who might go to Indonesia and have sex with an Indonesian outside of marriage, and therefore someone dobs them in if it's an Indonesian family member, they can dob them in to the police. So this is, again, this idea of selective prosecution in order to try to have a more chilling effect over society, I think. And that's, you know, that's probably been overstated a little bit how tourists would be involved. In Australia, there's been these media about this bonk ban going on. You know, Australians can't go to Bali and have sex. But in fact, what we're really looking at here is about individuals in an Indonesians reporting individuals who are Indonesian.
And a final question from us, how does this then impact the country's image as an investment destination? Because in the last few years, Indonesia has really risen up the ranks in terms of foreign direct investment.
Yeah, so often as analysts, we tend to overstate how this might impact tourism or foreign investment or these kind of things. And there's a whole range of other factors that are at play if you're talking about investing in Indonesian sort of business and trade and the economy more broadly. I do think that at the moment, we're probably not going to see too much change around tourism and investment. However, if we do see a high profile case, which dominates headlines and seems sort of outrageous and ridiculous, and you know, which is highly possible given these sweeping new laws, then you might start to see people say, well, Indonesia's sort of democracy is declining, the laws are more arbitrary, and it's not a safe place to invest. And that is ultimately the concern.
Ross, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Ross Tapsell, Senior Lecturer at the Australian National University, giving us a bit of a rundown on the implications of Indonesia's controversial new criminal code. A lot of questions still on how this is going to be implemented, but really a chilling effect is the big concern that could come out of this.
Yeah, it looks like Indonesia may be going back to the dark ages. I mean, it's really ironic. You have Indonesia, like you mentioned, Sean, it's a rising star in ASEAN. It's attracting investments and FDI, wooing Elon Musk to set up factories in the country. And then you have all these draconian laws, which evidently will have a negative sentiment on tourism, as well as the country as an investment destination as a whole. And I think no matter what concessions are made for foreigners and tourists, the fact that such a law is in place, it makes it controversial and still open to interpretation as well.
7:46 in the morning, we're heading into some messages, and then when we come back, we'll discuss the priority issues for the Youth and Sports Ministry. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.